Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Mobility Radio, featuring industry leaders and innovators in mobile technology.
Good morning. This is Brett Cooper from Blue Fletch Mobile here. Two great guests this morning from Cardalytics have Fred Fuller, and then from O'Neill have Terry Davidson. Which very cool business we were talking about before the show. Why don't you tell me what you guys are working on these days?
Well, O'Neill Interactive only really has one product that they push, and that product is called Shop This Live. It's a app vending machine. Basically, it's like a large iPad. You slide through the categories that you're interested in, and an app that you're interested in, you actually touch it, and through SMS, which is text messaging, or through QR codes, you actually download it right to your phone, right then and there. There's nothing else for you to do. You can walk away, and it's still downloading through progressive downloads. Or you can take a picture of some of the apps, and when you show up to the retailer, let's say you do an e-coupon, you just literally have already – you've got the coupon like you would in the paper. They recognize it, they scan it, and you're done.
So this process is called app discovery is the official term for it?
Correct.
What's the other way, or I guess people are out there? Is there anybody else pushing app discovery via other mechanisms?
Oh, yeah. It's a huge market because it's 2.5 apps in both stores. And the issue is 20% of them get downloaded. The other 80% actually kind of get downloaded by your mother, your sister, your brother, and a guy who knew you from school. That's really about it.
Yeah.
So you put a lot of time, effort, and sometimes huge amounts of money to literally have no action. So what we've done is combine promotion, advertising, and closing the sales loop. Because if you look around town, you're starting to see billboards with apps on them, promoting them. You hear them on the radio, you see them on TV, but they don't close the sales loop. All they're really doing is giving you a little bit of awareness, and what you really need is to actually close the sale.
But you guys do something special. Your secret sauce is what you'd call it, the captive audience.
Yeah, we really are located in places that we have what we call downtime. People literally, we're going in Hartsfield Airport, which is the busiest airport in the world, with about 93 million people come through that airport. The airport is constantly marred in delays, being rerouted, whatever have you. Once you go through TSA, you're never going back through it. So you're going to stay at that concourse, and you're going to wander. And while you're wandering, you're touching things. There's some vending machines in there that sell an array of things in the traditional sense that do about $50,000 a month just because it's so many people.
Can you talk about what's the experience? So I see one of your machines, and I walk up to it, and what do I see on the screen?
Well, there's a call to action that's, let's say, a loop. It's a video loop, and it's showing what's on the screen, what's hot, what's going on, and with a constant flashing, touch me. You touch it, it comes alive. You pick the category you want by just sliding through, and you see that right then and there. Let's say you like games. You move from games to fitness and wellness apps. You slide over. And now you're looking at fitness and wellness apps. I'll give you an example. This figure was quoted to me, so I can't really say if it's a legitimate figure.
Don't worry, all statistics are made up. It's fine.
Okay. There's estimated to be in the neighborhood of 20,000 fitness and wellness apps. The question is, people say, well, I'll go to my phone and do it. Yeah, you can say that. But the statistics prove that you don't, because 80% of them are dying in the vine. If you're looking at wellness apps and you've got 20,000 of them, which one do you choose? What we try to do is limit the content on the screen to make it exclusive. If you decide to be on our screen, you're not going to be marred with a ton of competitors. You're going to have competitors because that's the nature of the app game, but it's going to be limited, giving you a better chance to shine.
Yep. What's your vetting process for? So somebody comes to you and says, "You know, I want to advertise in the airport. Here's my app." How do you vet them, and what constraints do you guys have around what you actually put on the kiosk?
The only constraints really is it can't be anything that is questionable content, and that's defined as porno or non-family friendly.
So the internet.
That was great. Yeah, like Google apps. You can make an app and post it anywhere and just download it anywhere.
Yeah.
They don't have what I see as a strong vetting process. Apple, on the other hand, are guardians of the gate. They literally call through your content and decide if they're going to let you on or not. So we don't have too many problems with their content. But Google, on the other hand, is more open source. Let's just call it that.
Yeah. On the kiosk itself, does it show both app types at the same time? Like if somebody only has an Android versus an iPhone, do they see them both? Or what's the spread there?
It actually shows that one app. And then when it appears on your phone, from right then and there, you hit Android or you hit Apple.
Got it.
And that's it. And there's nothing more to it.
And so most of your customers support both?
It's really – it's a hodgepodge. It's very difficult to tell at this time. Now, we do a ton of analytics. We actually know how many people walk by the screen. We know if they were black, white, young, or old because we teamed up with another company that has a piece of software that actually scans, and it does what we call anonymous visual data collection. We also do on-screen analytics, how many people touched it. But if you touched it, did you download it? So that way we're able to go back to the developer and say, hey, you got, let's say, 600 touches, but you only got 200 downloads. And let them decide from the information that we gather what didn't connect with the people. And I liken it to the book industry. I don't know if you've ever seen a book that you like, and then it comes back again with a whole different cover because they've kind of souped it up or they've given it a modern flow.
Yep.
That might be something you might need to do to your app or a better description in order to get more downloads. Because when it's all said and done, the business we're in is strictly increasing downloads.
And can you talk about in that airport setting – or where there's a captive audience, are games a lot more popular? Like I'm bored, I don't really want to do something productive, or my health and fitness app, it's there. But do people prefer games in those situations?
Everybody prefers games to anything. And it's just kind of weird. I mean, I'm not a gamer, but you take my wife and my daughter, even my mother-in-law plays Candy Crush. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. No, and it's a... My personal experience is I feel like when I'm in those situations, that's the only time I ever play video games is when I'm sitting in an airport and I have an undetermined amount of time between
right.
You know, when I'm doing what I'm doing now versus when I have to do something else, which I'm guessing is conducive to that type of behavior. Can you talk about, for apps themselves, like within, I guess, you know, the number of apps you have on the kiosk itself, is there like a spread of like 20% get 80% of the downloads?
That's hard to say at this time because it's so new. And with us just rolling out in Hartsfield as our first one, it's difficult to really give you those numbers because we don't have anything else to compare them to. Our goal is as we roll out to more areas, we'll be able to decide. And prime example, Hartsfield may be a gaming hub for us. But when we do it in, let's take New York. New York has two major airports. One airport might turn out to really be with wellness and fitness in the airport, and that other location may turn out to be more geared toward games. We don't know that yet, but that's something that we just brought on a data scientist, and he's filling our heads with a bunch of stuff that we didn't even think of, and we're trying to really figure out a way to make sure that we really monetize that opportunity.
Yep. And for your customers, what do you give them? Like so you said you're capturing all these analytics, you have the data scientist chugging through and doing analysis on this. If I sign up and say, you know, Terry, I would like to put my app in your device, like what do I see monthly? What's the feedback you give me?
We will give you a complete data sheet of literally everything we collect. How many people walk by versus how many people stop? How many people touched it? How many people download? Was the makeup geared toward a more urban flair, or was it more a corporate flair? So you can tailor that app or that your description better yet to that customer. Because prime example, hotels, rent-a-car places, those guys really like a lot of data, and they plan to be on the screen as well. So you can actually, like me and my wife flew into a place, and we kind of hopped from city to city one time and forgot to book a hotel somewhere. So we had to try to find a hotel, not knowing anything about the city. And actually, we didn't even really speak the language. We had to try
to... Was it Milwaukee?
We got a comedian on here. So we had to find a hotel. And there was a barrier. So you've got to be able to sift through those analytics to find out what caters to your customer, because you've got a lot of boutique hotels ran by major hotels, so it's different.
Yeah, so. I guess everything is regionalized too. Can you speak a little bit on the, for the your typical customers? Is it something where they'll use you guys for a couple months to help with numbers, or is it something where you're envisioning they're going to be continuously putting more different apps in as they rotate them out? Like, what does that look like for them?
Well, our goal is to have a long-term relationship with them, and that's one of the reasons we're really hot on the analytics, so we can also tailor our offering to what they need. Because it's one thing for us to conceptualize, sit and have meetings, and come up with concepts, but when you try to roll them out, the market usually tells you what they'll buy and what they won't buy. So we're going to really try to make sure that we give them what they want. And the only way to do that is to listen to them.
Yep. And on the note of analytics, you guys talked a little bit about you have the ability to understand what those demographics look like of young versus old, like different subdivisions like male versus female. Are there any things you guys see are strong trends? Is it like the youthful people are more likely to click on something and download it, or is it across the board where you'll have a lot of old people getting stuff too?
It's
not old people, but people who are
seniors,
wise,
mature. We'll call them mature.
Sorry, Stone. What do you guys call?
Well,
ouch.
How would I put it? The assumption is that it's always young people, but I used to do a lot of business with McDonald's. I started their in-store television network, and they have what they call, and it's unofficial, it's called the Breakfast Club. And I've seen these guys for years. A bunch of older guys that retired sit around and chit-chat and talk with the newspaper. I don't see that anymore. They have iPads. And they're sitting around flicking stories, passing the iPad back and forth. Say, hey, look at this story, and they're talking. And these are guys that are well into their 70s and 80s. And that kind of blew my mind, because when I think of an iPad user or a smartphone user, I'm always thinking of a younger guy. And now I've had a couple of meetings with some older guys, and I mean guys like 75 years old. They're telling me stories, and then at the end I'm like, let's swap information. They're like, okay, what's your email? And they're emailing me right there from their phone. It kind of blows me away, because I envision that guy still carrying around a card versus that guy actually doing it electronically.
Yep. I'm glad there's a name for it. I didn't know it was called the business or the Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
I do observe that, though, and I've noticed the same thing where there are a lot more people using iPads and devices these days. If people want to get in touch with you and want to advertise with you, where do they go to find out more about getting their apps on the kiosk?
You can go to shopthislive.com. You can actually see the kiosk in action. You can contact us via phone at 404-758-6200, or you can email me directly at terry@shopthislive.com. The company name is O'Neill Interactive, but the brand is completely 100%
Shop This Live. Awesome. Cool. All right. Fantastic. I'm going to flip over to questions for Fred here from Cardalytics. So I guess another Atlanta overnight success story. Was it only took half a decade? Is that right?
Yeah, thereabouts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overnight might be a little bit of a stretch.
I love when people use the moniker of they're overnight success. I'm like, those guys have been around for 8 years, right? But I see that a lot with, especially in the startup space. It's a lot of hard work that goes into it. And you've been there for how many years now?
I've been there for 3 years.
3 years. Yeah. So seen a lot of changes, a lot of growth. A lot of good things about you guys. Can you give us a background on Cardalytics and what you guys are doing?
Yeah, Cardalytics is a card link marketing company, so it's a three-pronged approach to marketing. So what we do is we work with financial institutions to leverage their transaction data, and we use that data to provide value to merchants, and the merchants then can place offers in the online banking space for their customers. So the merchant wins because they get a highly targeted audience. The customer wins because they get cash back rewards for things that they would spend money on every day. And then the bank wins because they deepen their relationship with their customers. And all of this, of course, is anonymized. So they don't know that it's Fred Fuller that they are going after. They just know that it's a customer that shops in that vertical.
Yeah. What was the origin of this concept, this idea?
That's a great question. So our company was started by Scott Grimes and Lynn Loby, who were two executives that formerly worked with Capital One. And they were having a conversation one night, and they realized that the transaction data that they have access to, it's the key to what it is that merchants want in their advertising focus, right? So they know that you can look at transaction data, and you can predict what people are going to do, right? And so they know if I shop in a particular vertical. And so if I go to Burger King, but McDonald's wants my business, then McDonald's can place an offer under that Burger King transaction, and then they can incent me or entice me to come into their shop, their store.
What's that offer look like to the consumer? Is there, they have an app, and what's the how do they get that?
So we have a mobile solution, obviously, and then you can do it online. So in your online banking space, and there's several different locations, we can place offers in the transaction space, so right under a transaction. We have a widget, which kind of sits on the right-hand rail, and then we have what we call the reward summary, which is where all the content is. So you can go in and you can see all the offers that you might have available to you.
Can you give an example of somebody who's leveraging Cardlytics and helping to grow their brand, or helping them give coupons out?
Sure. Well, there's two sides of it, right? So Starbucks is on one side, and they want to, they want to go after coffee buyers that aren't coming into Starbucks. They also, they break the categories down into three groups, and it's frequent, infrequent, and new. And so there are people that have never been to Starbucks. They want to incite them to come in, or entice them to come in. And so they will give them an offer for, say, a 15% cash back. But then somebody that comes in but doesn't come in very frequently might get 10%, and somebody that comes in all the time would get 5%. What's really interesting about our program and what we can do is when you talk to merchants say, well, I know my loyal customers because they come in, three times a month. And we can go into the data and we can say, well, they do come into your shop three times a month, but they're also shopping in your vertical elsewhere seven times a month. So if you want that whole share of wallet, then you still need to get them to come back in the door a few more times during that period.
Yep. And how do customers get access to those analytics? So you guys have, all the card analytics, hence the name, I'm guessing, about somebody's purchasing history in relation to the card that they signed up with. How is that consumed by that coffee shop or that bagel shop?
Well, they don't get any of the data. Right. So what we do is we provide performance analytics on their campaigns, but we do not provide them any data. We can tell them what the target audience is based on the way that they define it. So all of the, and this is really critical, right? All of the PII or personally identifiable information sits behind the bank's firewall, and it's anonymized. So we essentially send queries over to the bank to say, hey, give us a group of people that would fit into this category, and then we can place the content in front of them.
Okay. So I won't walk into my coffee shop and have the guy yelling at me because I shopped somewhere else seven times.
Well, you, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you. We're going to set you up with a special program. But,
Oh, no.
It's coming back
it's
on you now.
Bad
yeah,
enough.
Here we go. No. And as a matter of fact, you could walk into Starbucks right now and say, hey, what do you know about Bank Amerideals, which is the name of the program that we have with Bank of America? They're our largest financial institution. And the chances are they're going to say, I'm not familiar with it, right? Because we're working with folks at the corporate office.
Yep.
And so they're not, the people that are pouring the coffee may not know all the advertising initiatives in place. And that's, that's not what they're there to do.
Yeah,
so.
Folks not moving the bigger picture and the larger campaigns, I'm assuming.
That's right.
And what's what are the end results of the value that some of your customers, can you talk about any of the success stories? Like, is it, they'll see, 1-2% lift across the company-wide?
Oh, no. Well, we see what we measure on is return on ad spend, and we see return on ad spends in the 15 to 20 range. So 15 to 1, 20 to 1, they are elated. And so what I can say about the success of our program from a merchant perspective is that we have very, very, very few merchants that have ever walked away from the program. They all come back in. And so the way it works is a merchant will sign up to run a 45-day campaign with us, and we put the campaign out there. After the campaign ends, we'll go through the analytical process. We'll look at how many people went in and shopped and how much traffic we drove for that merchant, how much revenue we drove for that merchant. And then they'll reevaluate, and they will sign another contract with us to come back into the channel. And so we have merchants that are now spending millions and millions of dollars with us.
And do you guys go through, do you guys partner up with agencies at all, or is it mostly just the companies come directly to you?
No, it's a little bit of everything. So we do have an agency focus. We do go directly to the merchants. We'll take them however we can get them.
Yep. And as a consumer, who holds a card, like how do they, like, what's that benefit plan look like to them? How do they perceive that? Like, is there something where their bank says, hey, sign up for this and you'll save 10%? Or
no, and that's one of the great misconceptions. So when we first started, a lot of people wanted to compare us to Groupon, right? And our model is entirely different. There is no commitment from the customer. The content is in the banking space. They look at something. If they like it, they click on it. Once they click on it, it's attached to the card. If they go shop, they get the reward. If they don't shop, it just expires and goes away. So there's no commitment. They don't have to put any money up front. They don't have to, there's no investment. There's not, I mean, it's just, it could not be easier for a consumer. There's new coupons to print. It's nothing.
So if I go to my Bank America like webpage, I'll see the offers there associated with like certain transactions, or how does that manifest itself to the users so they can take advantage of those things down the road?
So it'll be, you can see it in the transaction space. And then again, on the right-hand rail, when you go into online banking, you'll see something there that, that'll say, you know, here's an offer for AutoZone or Starbucks or Sports Authority. And then there is a tab. And so when you're in your online banking space, if you look up top, there's all kinds of tabs, and there's a tab called Cashback Deals. Click on that and you can go in there and you can see all the content that's available to you. And then all you have to do is click on one of the offers and it's there, it's done. And next thing you do is go shop, and then a month later you'll get the cash back.
It's cool stuff.
It's very interesting. And you know, Terry, you talk a little bit about demographics, and so we have people from time to time, and they ask us, what demographic data do you have access to? And our response is, you don't need it. We don't need demographics, because what you want is somebody that shops in that vertical. You don't care if they're old or young. You don't care, you know, ethnicity. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you just want to know, are they in that vertical? Do they play in my space? And are they coming to my store? If they play in the space and they're not coming to my store, I want them in my store.
Yep. And for you guys, I guess the biggest benefits, as you said, there's kind of three tiers. There's the banks, the advertisers, the consumers. Is the biggest benefit, I'm assuming, is to the advertisers and consumers. Is there anything the banks are getting out of it?
Well, it deepens their relationship with their customers, right? It's a value add. I mean, so you're going to go spend money. You're going to go do some Christmas shopping, right? And so
my wife tells me, yeah.
Yeah. If you're smart, you're going to go do Christmas shopping. And so it doesn't matter you know, where you're going to go per se. You want a certain product. And so if you have an offer out there that you can go one place to get it versus another, then you're going to do that. You'll go left instead of right. And so the value for the bank is really that it just deepens the relationship with their consumers, and it strengthens the relationship between the two.
Yeah. And that cash back, is it something they just like, I guess the coupons themselves, they just see that roll into their bank account the next month, you said?
That's right. Yep.
That is pretty cool.
It gets deposited in their bank account. And then within our space, you'll see, if you go into the cashback deals tab, you can see deals that you have active, deals that have expired, and deals that are processing. So you can see how much cashback you've earned over time.
Yeah. And from a mobile space, do you guys have a mobile app or mobile presence, or is it all just happens magically through everybody else's pieces?
It's magic. I
love
that.
It seems a little magical, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's we've got little pixies and stuff.
Like, would I like to save money? Yes. And the money just shows up.
And the money just shows up. That's all you have to do is answer one question, and it's free money. So we do have a mobile solution. All of our banks have a mobile solution. And so if you go to your Bank Ameridiels app or your Bank of America app on your mobile phone, then you'll see the cashback deals tab in there, and then you can take advantage of it there as well.
Awesome. That's cool stuff. And then for growth, I know you guys have been growing a lot in the last few years, and I think there was some sort of announcement about recent money that was raised there to help fuel your growth. What does that look like for you guys? Are you guys continuing to grow bigger and bigger until you start your own bank, or what does it look like for you?
Well, I don't think starting our own bank is on the product roadmap. But
I mean, you don't have to talk about it if it is.
Yeah, that's right. Shh. Are we? This is the cone of silence, right?
Nice, we're good. Yeah,
nobody can hear this. We just raised $70 million in capital. We've raised a total of $170 million through time. The company's about 8 years old, as you mentioned. And we're going to use that to fund additional growth. So we continue to grow our network via bringing more banks on. FIS is a large processor, or they provide online banking for smaller credit unions and so forth. And so we signed a relationship with them about a year ago, and we're working on getting them implemented. They actually invested in Cardlytics as well. So we continue to expand and bring on new banks. We're very close to signing another one of the top five banks in the country, but I can't disclose that at this point. And we have a very large regional. So that's the key, right? And that's the challenge with this business is growing, keeping both sides kind of in parallel, because you want to be able to consume the budgets that the merchants are signing up for, and you need the network to do that. So we continue to bring banks on, and we continue to grow the merchant side as well.
What does that look like from a transactional space for you guys? I'm assuming with the number of banks, the number of offers that are out there, that's got to be a pretty big volume. Like, do you have a sense of what that volume looks like and the number of just like deals and transactions you guys have to track against?
Yeah. So we, let me see here. We serve about 1 billion ads a month. And
with a B, right?
That's with a B, yes. Big B. Billion ads a month and drive sales about 500 million every quarter. So when you talk about data and data scientists, we have a whole gaggle of folks that this is what they do. And they're good at it. They're really good at it. My degree happens to be in statistics, and I thought I knew a thing or two about numbers until I got here. So it is the power behind what we do is in the analytical space.
Awesome. And then can you talk about Atlanta? Just you guys grew up, the company started here, it's been here the last 8 years. And why Atlanta? What's the big benefit or draw for you there?
Well, the benefit of Atlanta is that it's there's a tremendous amount of talent here. It's a very large online banking and payment processing space. A lot of people, I think, if you're not in the space, you don't realize how saturated it is, which is a wonderful thing. That's not a negative term at all. And then when you look at the schools that we have, I mean, there's a lot of very, very, very bright people coming out of the institutions, the universities that we have here in Atlanta. So when you look at Georgia Tech and UGA and Polytech, and there's just a lot of talent here. It's also a very affordable city to live in. And so when they started the company, they being Scott and Lynn, they just decided that they wanted to go someplace that they felt would be a good place to raise their kids and to tap into a lot of talent and grow a technology company.
Nice. And Terry, for you guys, what's the draw of Atlanta for O'Neill? And I'm assuming you guys are growing here also, taking advantage of some of the things that Fred just mentioned.
It's exactly what he mentioned. We looked at other locations, but the issue was quality of life. Atlanta provides that, and access to an airport that can get you anywhere that you need to be ASAP. It was really huge for us, because when you're putting in machines in physical locations, you want to be able to get to them pretty quick. Atlanta affords that. There is a lot of talent here. From the money standpoint, Atlanta is still lacking in the investment community for us. But the Georgia Chamber, well, it's the Metro Atlanta Chamber is really putting a lot of emphasis into angel investing. And it was something that plays closer to what he just talked about. I just found out that 70% of all transactions in America go through Atlanta, through the three of the big boys that are here that actually process the credit cards and I guess the debit cards or whatever have you.
Yep. Yeah. It's definitely the hub of global or North American transactions, right?
Yeah, it really is. And then I would mention while we're headquartered here, we also have offices in London where we have a couple of banks live there and seen great traction. And then we have offices in San Francisco and New York as well.
But none of them are as good as Atlanta, right?
No, Atlanta rocks. I hope everybody in the other office is listening to this.
Right.
Fantastic. And I guess for Cardlytics, how do companies take advantage of you? So let's say my coffee shop with, 10 restaurants or, a chain of 100. Like how do I sign up and get engaged with Cardlytics?
I think the best thing to do would be to go to our website. There's a place online where you can fill out a form and say, hey, I'm interested in this. And then it goes out to our sales team and we'll have somebody contact you. And something else there in terms of proximity is we have our sales forces located throughout the country. And so don't think that you have to be in Atlanta, New York or San Fran to take advantage of this. We will come to you.
And how big do I have to be to take advantage of Cardlytics?
Yeah, that's a good question. What we do is we look at we look at a few different data points, some trips and spend, and we look at if you have five or more locations, you're probably prime for us.
Nice. Take advantage of it and get that the 15% lift or 15-1 lift.
Yeah, it's 15 to 20 or more, and it all depends on the vertical.
That's pretty awesome. And then the website, can you spell it out? Because I think yeah. I always say it the wrong way.
No, yeah, that's good. It's Cardlytics, CardLytics.
And people can just go there and there's sign up more information about the process
that's
on
right.
there.
That's right.
Cool stuff. So I guess another question just for I'll start with Terry. Mobile web versus web. So I know you guys are selling apps and, that there's a lot of talk around, moving away from apps, moving back to just the mobile web where the apps are living on the website themselves. What's your thoughts on that? Do you have any insight into, is anybody out there like trying to sell games or things that are web-based, or is everybody still sticking to the app stores?
They're doing a little bit of both, but it's mostly apps in general. But there are a couple of companies that have, I like to call them a shell, that appears to be an app, but you're really on the mobile web. And it's an HTML5 app, and they're just rocking it.
So hybrid apps.
Yeah, I think it's, how would I put it? I really think it's the Wild Wild West. It's so new that you have so many people trying and doing different things, and hence the term innovation. I mean, they're just being innovative. They're just coming up with ways to get it to play the way they want it to play.
And you touched a little bit on the Apple Store versus the Google Play Store. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on just overall like uptake? Is it pretty 50-50 for you guys and app downloads? Or do you have visibility into that?
Not at this time, but it does appear that Apple would still be the leader, even though there are more Android devices out there. I think there's a different clientele for Apple versus Android, because Apple's a little expensive to get in. The phones aren't cheap. They don't offer a lot of deals. You can pick up an Android phone for free. They just want you to sign a contract or give them $99 and you're in. Apple, on the other hand, is, I guess, the Cadillac. I guess we don't use that term anymore. Let's say they're the Lexus.
Some people still say Cadillac. I mean, you go to McDonald's.
Well, I like
you go
the new
McDonald's.
Cadillac.
You go to McDonald's this morning. You probably could have talked to those guys about the Cadillacs.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. But I think that's the difference. I think Apple still leads in the download space.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
in the monetization of the marketplace.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of that is because of positioning. Since they kicked it off, I mean, that's how people live and breathe.
Yeah, and for you guys, you charge for placements. You don't actually charge for downloads, right?
We don't charge for downloads, but we charge to give you what we call a slotting fee. We charge a slotting fee to give you space. Because otherwise, if you don't pay, there's somebody else that wants to pay, and we've got to make room for them.
Yep. Do I pay more to get a position top left, or is there any math or science to that?
No, not really, because the way the system is designed, at one glance, you can see every app in that category per slide. So the first slide is 24 apps on the screen. You can literally, with a bird's eye view, just literally see the whole thing.
But all the ones for little kids, you guys put lower to the ground, right?
Right. But
we don't
really go after little kids because they need permission to download.
Their dad's always standing there. It's fine.
Hopefully. Like, here especially in an airport.
Oh, nice. So another question, payment. So Apple Payment, Google Wallet. I know, Fred, for you guys, you're in that payment space. What are you seeing? Is there anything that you guys are planning on around the payment space or payment tech?
Another one of those. That's right. I think that what Apple's doing with Apple Pay is very exciting. I think it brings more visibility to the space, and in the way that they've gone about it and the relationships that they've built with the financial institutions, really there's opportunity there, I'm sure, to create some relationships that will help drive both.
You mean every time Apple Pay tells me I just paid for something, I click on a Cardlytics coupon for next time?
That's right. Yeah, something. Well, hey,
that would be good.
We need you in product development.
Yeah, when you were telling me that, because I don't actually look at credit card statements anymore, because Apple Pay tells me every time I spend something, I could see a list of all my recent payments. It'd be a great spot to plug that in. If you guys make that work for me, I want to save some money. I want to see my money back.
Write this down
next month.
Send an email to Apple.
Steve Jobs@apple.com.
Yeah, that's right. No, I think it's exciting, and I think it will create a world of opportunity.
Cool. And then Google Wallet, do you guys have any like sense on that? I mean, it seems like it's sort of fragmented across the different providers?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a wait and see type approach, right? I think there's been a lot of talk about mobile payments and mobile wallets for a long time. And you know, there's a conglomeration of cell phone carriers that have been trying to get one off the ground for a long time as well. And so until those things start to gain a little more traction, I think we're just gonna sit back and see what happens and
keep using our plastic if we have a Google phone.
Yeah, keep using your plastic and the consumers are gonna speak, right? That's really what's gonna happen. The consumers are gonna speak and then that'll tell us where we need to be.
Cool. And then, Terry, for you guys, do you guys plan on taking payment directly from a kiosk anytime soon for apps or app access?
No, because it slows down the process of what we want to do. We want you to get the information and move on so someone else can get on the machine and use it. And we don't want the liability of the payment issue, because once that's breached from a security standpoint, they usually go after the person with the biggest pockets, but they also do go after the guy with the smaller pockets because he's easier to crush.
Yep.
So it's probably so what we try to do
this
is...
feels like business school right here.
Yeah. So what we try to do is make sure that process happens on Google side and on Apple side, and it removes us from it, and we don't have the obligation.
Yep. And you just talked about this, that the screen and screen time. Like, how do you guys keep people from just hogging and reading about every single one of the apps when they're bored in the airport? And
you can't.
No.
I mean, we've even thought about having what we call ambassadors stand at the screen, kind of give you a little bit of update. We're still kicking that around, and we might implement that. But it's really hard to tell a guy that, hey, your time's up, buddy. Keep it moving. I mean, you might want to, but it's...
What about this? A recommendation for a speed reading app. Seems like you've been here a while. Here's a recommendation for a speed reading app. Please download this and come back in 10 minutes.
Right. You got to do something.
Nice. How do you guys handle that? Do you have anything that helps you prevent, when somebody's hogging the thing where other people are able to look at it? What's the mechanism there?
No. I mean, we've talked about it. We've come up with a couple of crappy solutions, so we're not going to implement them.
Yeah.
Because most of them, it kind of puts you in a rude situation. And what you want to do is you want to have a good customer experience. And because word of mouth is the ultimate form of advertising,
yep,
every time they interact with us, we want to make sure they leave with a smile.
And eventually their flight will come in too, right?
Hopefully.
Their gate will call for them.
Well, actually, the airport employees, vendors, I don't know if you've ever really been there when the flights are not going to take off. If you can see the owners and the managers, the people that actually reap the financial benefit, they become extremely, almost like they need to be escorted off the concourse because their revenue just literally shoots through the roof. You got a guy who's making, let's say, 20 grand a day. He's now up to $50,000 a day selling the craziest stuff from bagels or chicken or burgers out of nowhere. It's just making a killing because you're stuck there. Because, again, nobody ever wants to go back through TSA for anything.
What about the DMV? Are you guys going to move in there pretty soon?
No, but the DMV does have a nice they've got a nice screen. I mean, it's not touch. Our problem and kind of what kicked off what we're doing is we did McDonald's for a long time. They weren't touch screens. It started off in gangbusters. People loved it because McDonald's is America's number one daily destination. People go in there for breakfast, and then they're going to go in there in the evening on the way home because they're not going to cook. The kids are screaming, take me to McDonald's. They don't ever scream, take me to a top five restaurant. They want to go to McDonald's no matter what. but the issue was as the web started to mature and mobile started to take off, people really wanted real hardcore numbers. And the only numbers we could provide is the McDonald's numbers that we could get. How many people went in? Couldn't tell you how many people looked at the screen, and it was very difficult to tell you how many people actually benefited financially from that ad. And, you know, we did it a lot with car dealerships, and they did the same information. Well, how did you hear about us when you get to the car dealership? They don't do anything with that information. Information is just conversation. It's kind of like when you're shopping and people say, can I help you? They really don't want to help you. I mean, so... that's what I learned in dealing with some of the big car dealerships here. They never collected that information. And I thought it was, why are you asking me? You know, get to
the
point.
Well, they're also missing an opportunity for bigger data.
Exactly.
Neither here nor there. So I guess last question. Any cool new mobile tech? So Terry, get anything cool you're playing with? Location based services or moats or anything? Beacons?
Well, we're looking at Beacon. Our chief engineer has come up with a cool thing that he wants to implement, and we're kind of vetting it to see if it'll be completely, you know, useful for us. But the coolest thing that I really like is we're working with a company out of San Francisco, has almost the same technology as Fire, where you take a picture of something and it lets you kind of see where it's at. But this one would actually take you right to our content. You download it and you walk away. So that way you don't have to search for a QR code to see if it's working. Your camera usually always works. You don't have to text in. Literally just hold your phone up, take a picture, walk away, and you're done.
Is this for like something on the screen, or is it something the guy in front of me playing a game where I take a picture of him playing the game and it tells me what he's playing?
Oh, no. It's strictly stuff on the screen.
Okay.
We try not to be invasive, because if we take a picture of that guy, we might have to owe that guy something.
Yeah, but now I have to ask him what he's playing.
Right, exactly. And if you take a picture of a woman, you know, they're okay, like, well, let's
move on
now.
So moving on. Fred, what about you? What cool tech are you guys playing with or looking into in the next year or so?
Yeah, we're doing all those things. We have a couple banks that are currently live with location-based services. We know that mobile is the place to be. It's the future. And for what we do, what's interesting is, you know, you may not remember all the deals that you have available to you, right? Because you don't have the mind space for it, just because you have so many other things to be concerned with. And so when you have the mobile solution and you walk out to go to lunch, that could be the thing that determines where you go, right?
Yep.
So all of our banks have a mobile solution through their app, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, and then location based is the thing that we really want to get rolling in a big way coming up in the near term. But we have a couple banks that are live on it. They're very happy with it. We've seen a considerable lift in their performance, and so it is the thing of the future for sure.
Cool stuff. Well, thank you guys for being on today. So it was a pleasure. And until next time, we'll see everybody soon on Atlanta Mobility Radio.